Everybody saw that he or she was always there. And do you know, that lovely woman read all the great children's classics to them, this beautiful voice. And they talk about it. And I remember one day she said, you know, Mrs. Butler, Saturdays are such dreadful days here. We had a lot of playthings in the backyard, and swings and teeter-totters, and every child for blocks around came on Saturdays to play and to fight and to scrap, and it was a hectic deal. And she said, would you mind very much if I took the children into Boston on Saturdays and we'll go to the different museums and see what's going on there? And then she said, we'll go to the YWCA and I can arrange a dinner with them where we share the orders and all, and it won't be expensive. And then she said they can go upstairs to the restroom in the YWCA and have their nap, and then they can have their swim lesson and swimming and be taught swimming, and then we can come home on the evening. Well, whoever heard of such a beautiful plan for children on Saturdays when I had to rearrange my home, my buying, my plans for the whole week? There was perfect quiet in that home. Nothing was going on. And I'll never forget seeing them come back from their toot that they had all day on Saturday, just dancing up the street and talking about the mummies they'd seen in the museum and where they'd gone for their swimming. And they'd had a lark all day long, just happy lark.
How often were you out of the house and doing your lecturing while she was...
Well, you see, that was the beauty of it. When I lectured for women's clubs, I was out of the house the middle of the day. I had to get there in time for lunch, usually. I went and had the lunch with them. I liked to do that because I could hear about the club, hear what they were doing, and get in touch with the officers. And the way those women get trained in that General Federation of Women's Clubs is marvelous. It catches the women when they come out of their homes after the children are a little older and still unskilled as to public life and so forth. Those women come out of their homes and get into that great movement and get trained as leaders. And finally, the real leaders, takes 25 years for them to get to be the national president. But you've never seen anything so wonderful as the training that they get in that General Federation movement. So I would get there in time for the lunch, and then I would do my speech, and we'd have a question period, and I was home. So I was always there, except the middle of the day.
So, but you would do this a couple times a week, usually?
Sometimes, never more. Usually once a week was enough, but sometimes I'd have two lectures a week. And every year...
You didn't start the teaching classes. You didn't start to teach the classes yet.
Yes, then very soon, I think within a year or so, the League of Women Voters in Cambridge brought it up. Would I be able to give them some classes in speech? And I did, and they were very successful. And then the Republican Women's Club, they had a big club in Boston, a beautiful club. They wanted a whole course in speech, and I began doing that. And the result was that in 5 or 6 years, I taught 33 classes of speech all over the suburbs around Boston, not many of them very far off. But I also started then, after I got started with the women's club, I went into the Woman City Club in Boston, which is on Beacon Street, and is a city club just for women. And they wanted the class. So my teaching in Boston was really launched by the Women's City Club, and the women came in from the suburbs to those classes and then got me to go out to the suburbs.
Now, how was, you taught a class for like 8 weeks or something?
I had 8 lessons a week, and I've forgotten what the... I didn't have very big fees for them because it was such a new idea that it wouldn't have been possible to do it. But the clubs found out, the women's clubs found out, that if they had a class in that club, they got the embryo leaders for the future. And then all the next leaders would be all leaders that had been in the public speaking class. So gradually, it began to develop into the training that was so badly needed by these women when they became friends, they'd start in at the lowest rung of the ladder and say, well, I'll be the recording secretary, but don't you put me chairman of a committee where I'm going to have to speak because, you see, I'm shy. Well, everybody's shy at that point, you see. And then they'd see their shy friend suddenly becoming less shy, and then after they were recording secretary, which was at the bottom of the rung, then maybe they were treasurer, and then pretty soon they were chairman of the Ways and Means Committee or chairman of the Program Committee, and then the next thing you knew, they were second vice president, first vice president, bingo, the president of the club. Next thing you knew, they're going to the district, all the clubs. You've never seen the genius of organization, which our dear British friends do not have. This is where we have them licked to a finish, because they have the local clubs, then in certain, the states chopped up into districts, and then they have a district, and all the local clubs go to the district, and they get training. And then they finally go into office in the state.
Now, did you then, at this point, begin to see this as your... as a new career for you?
Yes, I began to see that it was a career, but I began to see definitely that I needed some formal class teaching. I don't know how I got away with what I did there in New England with as little teaching as I'd had. I had to just sort of build it up the best way I could. It finally got to the place where they used to have every spring a huge meeting for the juniors, the young women. And I was always asked to go and speak at those. And finally I got so I went to their state conventions and put on a speech class. And it was really a great, it was, of course it was, I was blessed to be in New England. New England is a more cultured state, I think, than any of the other states. It is, the colleges are all there. The class of people that are there want education and get education. And it's a very cultured state. So that I had an easier time building up that career there than even in Washington. I had a rough time getting started in Washington. And in California, I never got started yet. I can't get the thing started here. It's been...
Well, when did you feel that you better get more training yourself before you go on then?
Well, I didn't quite know how I was going to do that, and then destiny came to my aid. Mr. Hoover, President Hoover, was defeated, and Woodrow Wilson became president. I mean, not Kennedy.
Roosevelt,
yeah. What was his first name?
Franklin Delano.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt became president. And the first thing he did was to fire all the men in all the states that had worked under Mr. Hoover. Now, we had not advertised ourselves as Democrats, which we were. But my husband suddenly found himself out of a job the first time in his life because, as head of the Department of Commerce for New England, he was fired, and the father of one of his secretaries was put in Hugh's job, the utterly untrained man. And here we were, both of us in a big house, big careers, flat, out of a job. And then he was able to get a very highly paid job in Worcester in a private firm. Everybody told him it was time for him to get out of the government and get into some private job. And so we moved to a house over in Worcester, and that was a complete failure. He was not trained for private industry at all. He was trained for working for Uncle Sam.
And did you keep up your speaking?
No, I couldn't. When I got to Worcester, I think I had one or two classes, but Worcester was a very backward town intellectually and in every other way. It was a totally factory town. And the only people that had any status in Worcester were the families whose husband had a high position in some big factory or some big industry. So we were out of our element completely over there. I want to tell you a very interesting experience we had. My husband started trying to get a job in New England, and we didn't know then that only people who graduated from Harvard or came from the right early New England families get big jobs in New England. And so for 2 months he went around trying to get another position, and many of his friends that were fired just fell apart. Some of them died. They just went to pieces. Men that had worked for Uncle Sam for years were dropped ruthlessly. And so he began looking very bad and very ill. And I remember one day I said, come on, we're going to, you still got a job here, haven't you? The vice president of this big firm was so upset that he had taken Hugh on and hadn't realized that he wouldn't fit into this high job, that he kept him on there for a month, and then he said out of his own income, he would pay him his salary for another 6 months while he was finding another job. So I knew we were going to eat for 6 months, so I remember I said one day, come on, we're going into Boston and have some fun. Well, I'll just say, I think you've got the story about the astrologer. And the next day, he packed his bag and went to Washington. And the question was, of course, what were we to do with the children? Did I cover that?
Just briefly, that's what I want to get into, because when you sent them away...
We had no place to go, we had no job. I felt we just could not cope with the ordered life we'd given these children up to this date. And I remember this beautiful private school that was out in Colorado Springs, right near the Garden of the Gods. And my family still lived in Pueblo. So I wrote the superintendent, president of that school, about my daughter and what we were going through. And she wrote back and said she's going through the same thing. She was losing her pupils. She wanted to keep the school going. So she would take my daughter in for $50 a month. If we could get her down to New York, where her son was going to be within a month getting a new car and would drive our daughter out to Colorado Springs. Wasn't that amazing? And she was just 10 years old. So I told her, have I covered this before, this trip? Well, I told her what was going to happen. And she said, oh, Mommy, you know how I love to travel. I would love to go. She had a turtle that she adored. So we put the turtle in the box and put her little Girl Scout costume on, and down to New York we took her, 10 years old, for a trip back across America with her turtle. And off she went. And incidentally, the turtle laid an egg on the way out. The turtle was supposed to be he, but turned out a she. And she got out to this beautiful school where she had her own horse, where she learned to ride, one of the best riders they ever had. But she proved to be a problem that we hadn't discovered. Now, this is what happens when you bring little children up, boxed up in your own little home. There are a lot of things you don't find out about them. And when she got out there, the day she got there, all the girls were coming into the school, when suddenly the entire crowd disappeared. Nobody could find anybody. She had gathered them all together and taken them out for a walk in an unknown place that she didn't know or anybody, and they were having the time of their lives. She had organized them. Up at this point, nobody knew that what she was capable of, and the teacher saw that they now had a problem child. And anyway, she stayed there, and they taught her to study. She was there 2 years. And then I found a friend that my son had gone to the summer school in Massachusetts with, and they knew him well, and he liked them, and they were going to Florida for the winter, and they took him to Florida for a very modest fee, just to have the fun of having him. They were a lovely couple, and he was down there all for a year, so my husband and I were free to struggle with our problem, to get him back into the civil service, into the United States government where he belonged. And I didn't know what I was going to get back into, so we went to Washington and went into a boarding house. And at this point, I got the bright idea, now's my chance to study public speaking officially and get some college credits. And luckily, there at George Washington University was Professor W. Hayes Yeager, head of the Chauncey Depew Department of Public Speaking that Chauncey Depew had endowed. And W. Hayes Yeager was one of the leading speech teachers of America. Imagine that. And I'm in a boarding house with no housework to So I went there for 2 years, took every course he had, and at the end of that time, I had never in my life been so happy. You know, after you have been married a long time and had children and had problems, and then you get to be 45, which I was, and you go back to school, if ever anything is heaven, utterly
heaven. Did you go
heaven.
Every day?
Every day. And I spent, I had nothing to do but prepare those, they're very tough lessons. Learning to speak is the toughest subject there is. And I spent 6 and 8 hours a day on those lessons in the beautiful library there. And I came out from Professor Yeager's class with the first A he'd ever given anybody. But I was in a class of 40 young people, and they were very bored with this old woman in the class. To their minds, I was old, even then. And they were all just in the regular college courses, 17, 18, and so on. And for the first 2 months or 3 months, they did nothing but giggle at every speech I made. So I discovered the skill of getting the ears of that type of audience, which didn't do me any harm either. And he had Professor Yeager. Did I talk to you about him before? Well, it's the most interesting story you ever heard. He had been so worked up about this skill in speech and its difficulty. Nobody faces what a skill. Chauncey Depew spent 10 years learning to be the great orator of America. It's a terribly difficult subject. Your personality's involved. Your audience involved. Everything you know is involved. And to know how to, you know what the perfect speech is. The perfect speech is the speech that knows how to put over a definite, effective point. How are you going to get over to your audience an effective speech that accomplishes the purpose that you've got to accomplish? It isn't just opening your mouth and letting words flow out like a river or a creek. You've got to have the words flow out that will accomplish the purpose of the speech.
Did you have a clear idea what it was that you would want to go speak about?
No, Professor Yeager gave me my program. At the end of 2 years, I was within 3 points of the master's degree. But they had no course there that would give me the master's. I took every course he had. And he told me, advised me not to go to any more courses. Or, of course, I was an older woman. I wasn't just a student in a school, in a college. He said, don't go after a doctorate, but get out into the woman's movement where leadership is developing. And there's where you want to do your speaking. So that was what gave me my goal. And immediately I found Mrs. McGill Kiefer, who was the most beautiful singing teacher of Boston, of Washington, and was the paid musical singer for the big Christian Science Church there. And so I knew Mrs. Kiefer, McGill Kiefer. Where can I start this speech class? And she said, in my studio.
Now this was about 1935 then, Jesse?
Oh no, yes, about 35 or 36. And so we got out a lot of cards, and I think something like 20 women came. And one of them was Mrs. Harvey Wiley, who had been very active in the woman's suffrage and the woman's party. She'd been the legislative agent and was now the legislative agent of the General Federation of Women's Clubs, a national organization, because she was so skilled in legislation from working with the women's movement. But she couldn't speak. She had never had any lessons.
Now, and were you still in the boarding house or after?
Yep, still in the boarding house. Thank goodness. No housework to do. It was a lovely boarding house. A wonderful woman ran it, had been running it for years. And we had marvelous meals. We had a great, big, huge, lovely room. It was in one of the old houses of Washington. Spacious house. And we had a lovely, great, big room at the front of the house. And all this time, Hugh was sweating it out to get located again in the government. And finally, the second year, He became one of the first employees of the Social Security Administration. Wasn't that wonderful? And it was not his field. He was not in industry. And but anyway, he got back into the government at the same salary that he had when we were married. This was now, we were married in 20, and this is now 45, 20 years later. But we were still getting this $600 a month from this kind man in Massachusetts, in Worcester, Massachusetts. So we had 6 months to go on before he landed that job.
So when you started your first class, then you were still in the boarding house?
Oh, yes, we were still in the boarding house. Okay. It was, in a way, a horrible experience, because after you've had a big home and a lovely charm, you know, these people that throw up their homes don't know what they're doing. There's something about a home that nothing else can take the place. And I'll never forget the Christmases we had in that boarding house. I thought I'd die. I was missing my children so, and the beautiful Christmases we'd had in our beautiful home in London and then in New England, and now here we were in a boarding house. So it was easy to get sorry for yourself.
But you were really enthused about your home.
I was completely worked up with these classes. I was just fascinated. And it helped me to help my husband. Otherwise, I'd have been so depressed, I would have been no good to him at all. But I was just fired up with this marvelous teaching. He was a great teacher. You know why? He had taken all the great speeches of the ages, like a person would take a chemical, and he broke those speeches down. What was it in them that made them live? And out of that study, he evolved a technique for the teaching of public speaking that is unlike any other teacher has and is completely effective. I could take a class of 40 students, and did many times, and I tell you that within four lessons, with that technique that I got from him, it was his technique, within four lessons, I had better speakers than you ever heard anywhere in America. Four lessons of people, some of them were women, never even been to high school. Doesn't make any difference if they know something about life. And they were all married women, they knew something. Unbelievable miracles. I finally got into the Congressional Club to teach, where all the wives of members of Congress were. Think of it. And I got there. They had me come and give my speech on pomp and pageantry at the Court of St. James. And they were so fascinated with that speech, because a lot of them wanted to have husbands get into Foreign Service, and a lot of them invited Foreign Service wives to come and hear the speech. Was I scared, though, because I hadn't been through my class yet. I nearly died before I made that speech. I thought I would die. Anyway, they loved it so I had, I think altogether, I had three classes at that Congressional Club, all congressmen's wives, and in no time at all, I had teachers going all over the states back home, talking about Washington, because after I had this first class, I sent out 2,000 cards to every congressman's wife, Senate wife, and Supreme Court wife, and everybody on that organization that I was starting this new class. And I had a beautiful room up at the All Souls Unitarian Church up on 16th Street. And I went there to start the new class after 2,000 cards, and guess how many were there? Three. And two of them were presidents of a club, and the third was the wife of the Republican leader of the House from California.
How'd you feel about that? That must have been pretty
bad. I nearly died. I near collapsed up. And then I said cheerfully, well, ladies, you're here. Did you come to get a class? Yes, they did. Okay, you're going to get the whole 8 weeks. Only, you've got to promise me you'll come, that you'll study and come. And they paid me the fee that I was to get. At the end of the 8 weeks, Mrs. Englebright from California said, this is the greatest experience I've had since I've been in Washington. Let's get Mrs. Roosevelt next year to come and open your class. Well, I said, that's an interesting idea. She was then taking lessons from a speech teacher in New York, Mrs. Roosevelt was. And she at first was just a horrible speaker because she had no voice box. So she had a voice problem. She had to get her voice out of the throat and up into the sinuses, which this teacher taught her how to do. And I said to Mrs. Engelbreit, well, you have to invite her. I'm a professional, and she can't go to a professional who's earning money without for some other reason. So she, the next summer, she wrote Mrs. Roosevelt, asked her to come the following fall when they got back and open our class. And luckily, I got the huge auditorium in the All Souls Unitarian Church for the opening meeting. And then I called up all the private schools in Washington where the little girls had come to Washington to learn to get educated and to have a fancy education. And I called them all up to send their students to come and hear Mrs. Roosevelt. So the balcony around the top was filled with these little girls with their chins hooked over the edge. And when we got there, were 500 people there. There wasn't a vacant seat. All the Supreme Court wives were there, Senate wives, housewives, diplomats' wives, because that was Mrs. Roosevelt, and that's the way she was.
Now, when was this, Jesse? Was this in
1939. Uh-huh. She opened that class, and I had a terrible experience in it, though. Do you want me to tell you what it was?
Do we have time now?
No, it's just 5 minutes of 12. So I'd like to tell you the disaster that took place at that great meeting, my first opening meeting.